Good afternoon for some of you and good morning for the rest of you. I'm Marion Mohl, and it's my pleasure to welcome you to the Conservative Movement's KRUV webinar titled, How to Put Out the Welcome Mat in Your Synagogue. This webinar is a product of the Movement Committee on KRUV, which has now been meeting and producing materials for the past 4 years. This committee represents the Federation of Jewish Men's Club, the Rabbinical Assembly, Women's League for Conservative Judaism, and the United Synagogue for Conservative Judaism. In addition to me, the members of our committee who have worked on our programs are Rabbi Bob Schlossberg, Rabbi Paul Drazen, Stephen Arnold Most, Art Spar, Richard Fishbane, and Rabbi David Lerner. A special thank you to United Synagogue for taking care of the registration and technical aspects for the webinar. Thank you also to the participants who've taken the time out of your busy schedules to participate. Just a few housekeeping instructions before we begin. Participants' phones will be muted during the presentations. If you have questions, we will take them after everyone has spoken. If you wish, you may direct your question to a particular presenter. In consideration of time, we ask for brief question only and no statements. Our first speaker will be Dr. Ron Wolfson. Dr. Wolfson is a professor of education for the Fingerhut School of Education at the American Jewish University in Los Angeles. In addition, he is currently co-founder and president of Synagogue 3000, an institute whose mission is to catalyze excellence in synagogue life. It's my pleasure to present Dr. Ron Wolfson.
Well, thank you very much, Marion, and hi, everybody, and may I wish you all an early Shana Tova. Thank you for joining this important topic and this important seminar. I would like to begin with a general overview of what I think is the most important mission of a kila, kedosha, a sacred community, and that is to be a community of relationship. We need to move our institutions from a synagogue of programs where we work hard to get tushies and seats to a synagogue of relationships where everybody feels connected to a sacred community that gives one's life meaning and purpose, belonging and blessing. This is a particular challenge, of course, for those we're trying to bring closer to Judaism, whether they were born Jewish or not born Jewish. For me, KRUV has always meant both in-reach and outreach, because so many of our members of synagogues themselves, already members, need the work of KRUV, the work of bringing people closer in relationship to each other, to the congregation, and to what I like to call the Jewish project. So for me, the challenge we face is to build those relationships, and the beginning of that work must be how people are warmly welcomed into our communities. And with the holidays around the corner, it seemed to me it'd be good to review quickly how we're going to welcome everybody in our community into our midst in this rather hectic holiday season. I think that it's so important that when people first come onto our properties, first call into our buildings, first engage with membership directors and executive directors and clearly the clergy, that everyone feel a sense of warm welcome. This extends, as we'll talk about a little later, into things like websites and how phones are answered and that sort of thing. But just permit me for one of my minutes to review how people ought to be greeted and warmly welcomed when they walk into our places for Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, and Sukkot. I mean, this is our prime time. This is a time when anybody who's coming into our community, whether Jewish or married to someone Jewish or thinking about becoming Jewish, has their first, sometimes their first experience in engaging our community. So we ought to be as engaging and as welcoming and as enriching as the Apple Store. I don't know if any of you have been in the Apple Store, but that place is unbelievable. It's turned into now it's the most successful retailer in the world. And one of the reasons it is that within 10 feet of walking into an Apple Store or within 10 seconds, someone is going to be there to greet you. That ought to be the same case in our congregations. I'd love to see a group of people out there in parking lots at key entries to our buildings on Rosh Hashanah with the diversity, reflecting the diversity of our community, acknowledging every single person who walks into our place with a warm greeting, a warm welcome, a warm Shana Tova, with offer of assistance and directions in our crazy, you know, some of our congregations have 16 things going on at the same time. A group of people who can answer all questions with respect, a group of people that that knows how to connect with each other and with the people who are coming to us. I think we ought to have our rabbis, and I know there are many of my friends, rabbis on the call, cantors on the call, we ought to be connecting our people once they get into our services. In the church world, this is called pass the peace. But wouldn't it be great if at some point in our very long Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur services, the rabbi said, turn to someone and say Happy New Year. You know what Rabbi Ed Feinstein does before we sing Kol Nidre at Valley Beth Shalom in Encino? He has people turn to their family members to ask for forgiveness. These I would call relational moments. These are opportunities to engage people in relationship once they're inside our buildings, inside our services. I would recommend that we all be careful about our language of welcoming. Our signage, most of our synagogues, frankly, are terrible at this. People who are new to our congregations can't find the sanctuary, can't find the office, can't find the restrooms. By the way, those restrooms ought to smell pretty good. And don't junk up your coat rooms with all sorts of stuff. Most coat rooms synagogues are dumping grounds. It's if the weather's not good, that's the first place people see when they walk into your building. I would love to see displays on the walls of our congregation of photos of the diversity of our community, of the many kinds of people in our community doing great things, worship, social justice, learning together. Instead, what we get are old Chagall prints and bad Israeli art. We're going to talk later. Steve's going to talk about websites. I've done a lot of looking at websites. Our websites are uniformly terrible. Their logos, their buildings, their stained glass, their photos of empty sanctuaries. That's what I want to join, a photo of an empty sanctuary. Our clergy ought to be doing much more what I call working the sanctuary. If you're able to get off the bima and go talk to people and greet them, that's what we ought to be doing. And don't forget to turn off your automatic sprinklers. I was in a conservative synagogue for Yom Kippur one year, and we all got out of services at 10 p.m., and sure enough, those automatic sprinklers went on, and everybody got drenched. No kidding. And I think, finally, let me wrap up by saying after the warm welcome, our main job, particularly with those who are from interfaith families or intermarried families or people thinking of conversion, is to connect people one to another. I'll give you an example of a Reform synagogue in San Francisco, which found out that there were lots of people who had no place to go for breakfast after Yom Kippur was over. So they organized 17 breakfasts in different neighborhoods in this community. 600 people showed up at these breakfasts. There might be people in your community, particularly those who are trying closer, who have no place to go for breakfast. We're talking about that. Think about, after the warm welcome, how we're going to engage people, how we're going to invite them to follow up of the big Rosh Hashanah push, Yom Kippur push. Can we organize ourselves to invite people to each other's homes and connect people in a much deeper relationship, both with each other, with our clergy, with our staff, with our membership committees, with the people that ought to be focused on bringing people closer to Jewish life. So thanks for inviting me. I look forward to hearing from the rest of our panelists.
Thank you so much, Ron. We appreciate it. Our next presenter is Rabbi Robert Schlossberg. Bob Schlossberg has been the rabbi of Congregation Out of Jeshurun since ordination in 1981. He has been chairman of the movement-wide Keruv Committee for the past 4 years and recently became chairman of the Masorti Foundation Rabbinic Council Cabinet. He will speak on making your building a welcoming place. Bob.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to participate on such an important topic. A few years ago, I had a revelation. I saw a person wandering our building, and it turned out that they were looking for me, the rabbi. It was a person of a different faith who was interested in their learning about their partner's Jewish religion, and I invited her into my office and asked what it was like coming into her partner's synagogue. And she said, well, you know, it was scary and confusing coming to see a clergy person, which I've never done in my life, and yet I just really found the building unwelcoming. I couldn't find anything. And she was right. When I thought about it, she was led in by a two-way speaker. No one told her where to go to find me, and even if she had been welcomed, there were no signs identifying any room except the bathrooms at that time in my synagogue. And so in response to this, which was really a wake-up call for me, I invited guests to visit the synagogue who were not members, and many of them had never even been in my synagogue, and asked their impressions. And they said, well, you know, your hallway is dark, it's kind of uninviting, there's poor lighting everywhere, there's really not enough natural light, and you've got these beautiful gardens outside, but no one can see them. And so as a result, we began a renovation of our building to really change how our building felt, to make it become more welcoming. There had been discussion of the renovation for a number of years, but I made the welcoming part of it a key component. We got new lighting in every public room. We had had a discussion a couple of years ago about getting Machzor Lev Shalem, and the vast majority of people at the first meeting that I had for the congregation voted against it. After we did the renovation of our main sanctuary and I had the discussion again, the vast majority voted for it. And it turned out the people who were opposed to it were because they had trouble reading it. Well, once the lighting was good, it was not an issue at all. We've hired someone locally who's an expert in making signs so that when you walk in, you know exactly where to go. But tastefully done signs that are welcoming. And one of the best examples in my particular community in Louisville is the University of Louisville. And so the person who was responsible and hired by U of L was hired by my congregation and is totally redoing the signs, because the truth of the matter is there was nothing designating the main sanctuary, the chapel, even where the office is. So there was no directions whatsoever. Another very important commitment that grew out of listening to other people was making my bathrooms and the entrances fully accessible. When someone is struggling to get into a building or getting into a bathroom, it does not make a very welcoming sign. And in fact, even a couple weeks ago, in the midst of our renovation, I went with someone to a church where she said, this is how the synagogue should be. And she showed me how it was very easy to get into the bathrooms. There was actually no doors to push, and it was designed brilliantly. And when she walked in, that took me into the building, there was someone welcoming them right away. And so we've committed to, you know, our architect has redone the bathrooms and the building, and anyone is going to be able to get into our building without assistance. We're also trying things that make people want to talk to each other. We're going to have a little coffee bar, which is not a difficult thing to do. We've got Wi-Fi now throughout the building. But most importantly, the lighting has changed. In a lot of cases, it's a matter of just changing light bulbs or fixtures, which is not a very expensive thing to do. The other aspect which my colleague Paul Drazen reminded me when we were talking about our presentations is often people don't even know what door to go into. And that was true with my building as well, which will be changed. It will be very clear which is the door to enter when one is let in because of our preschool. We have our doors locked during the day. So we've really made an effort to say, gee, you're welcome here. And when someone greets you, everyone in my staff has been told to greet people by welcome to Addis Yishuren. There's one last example of how we can make our congregations more welcoming. When you think about it, the experts in welcoming are really Disney. They're fantastic. Just like Ron said that there are places where you walk in and right away at Apple and they make you feel at home. Well, Disney is the quintessential welcomers, and they have a DVD that you can buy called The Disney Way, which is geared to teaching staffs how to become more welcoming. And every single person in my staff must watch that DVD, and we actually watched it together and talked about how we could become a more welcoming institution. So it's the building is only the beginning, but like Ron said, there's got to be humans that make people feel at home. And I strongly encourage everyone to get people to walk into their building and give you feedback on ways that it could become more welcoming. Lastly, in our particular renovation, we've decided to flip our bathrooms with our hallway. Our former bathrooms are going to become our hallway so that there can be outside light, and whereas our hallway, which was dark, no matter how much light we tried to get in there, didn't have natural light, and our former hallways are going to become becoming our bathrooms. And so we're going to use a lot more natural light, and the response of people has been absolutely dramatic. All of a sudden, a building with a very friendly, welcoming congregation, but a building which didn't say, gee, come in and feel at home, now is really feeling at home. And people are not only proud of it, but really feel good walking into our well-lit space. Thank you.
Thank you, Bob. Stephen Lachter, one of the original Federation of Jewish Men's Clubs K-Roof trainers and for 10 years co-chair of the Federation of Jewish Men's Clubs K-Roof initiative, has worked for the past decade with dozens of conservative rabbis and lay leaders to bring K-Roof to their synagogues. Steve is a member of the board and was a longtime member of the executive committee and an officer of Addis Israel Congregation in Washington, D.C. He will speak on publications and websites. Steve?
Well, thanks so much, Marion. It's a pleasure to be here. I'm not a technological person, but I think I looked at enough websites that I can speak, I think, intelligently to them. We live in this incredible technological environment that changes every day, and more than ever, your synagogue website reflects who you are, what the synagogue looks like, and what you stand for. It presents biographies of clergy and their accomplishments and highlights programming strengths. Both congregants, people in the community, those particularly this time of the year looking for synagogues to join, will undoubtedly look at your website. Your bulletin, of course, requires usually substantial lead time for an article to appear, but the website is now becoming the place for congregants and interested people and the public to interact with your synagogue. If you really are a welcoming place, you have to say so clearly and distinctly. If you are diverse, if you really welcome diverse populations, if you really welcome interfaith families, then your website needs to say so clearly and distinctly. If you're interested in welcoming interfaith families, you need a bold link right on the first page of your site that states that fact. In my synagogue's case, you could look at addisisrael.org, and there's a button right on the first page that says, Addis Israel welcomes interfaith families. When you click on that link, it takes you to all the pages with all the information about interfaith families, what is allowed, how these families are integrated in the community, how they can participate, and what they can expect if they become members of our community. I understand that practices, individual practices at shuls vary, but there's no reason why a person has to try to navigate around a website and take a lot of time to try to figure out exactly what facilities, how the particular synagogue views its diversity. We live in a world where one third of all married Jewish families include a non-Jewish partner. Nearly one half of all Jewish marriages, or to state it another way, where a Jewish partner is being wed, includes a non-Jewish partner. The same is true of couples living together outside of marriage, where I saw a number on our website, something in the neighborhood of 80%. These come from Professor Fishman's at Brandeis's population study, Choosing Jewish. Clearly, your website needs to state what you believe. If you're listening to the webinar, I assume you want to put out the welcome mat. That was the title of the webinar. And if you want to put out the welcome mat, you need to state that fact up front, clearly, and concisely. Now, I gave you my own synagogue website, but there's a very good example of how a welcoming website can be created. And that is, if you go on to the Federation of Jewish Men's Club site, which is www.fjmc.org, and you look under activities, there's a link for understanding intermarriage and Keruv, and also a link for about a 2.5-minute video creating a welcoming website. And this provides the basic tools for developing a site. In short, a website needs to be the most important welcoming tool. The welcoming piece must be obvious. A tagline must be prominent. If all your materials, brochures, flyers, and the like, a welcoming synagogue should express its core values with a strong tagline, and the site needs to be organized such that a user can get directly to the relevant pages without unnecessarily surfing around on the site. We've done a study, and it seems there's some reticence. This is the Federation has done a study, and there seems to be some reticence for individual synagogues to actually put welcoming on their website, even though many of their practices seem to encourage the kinds of welcoming and care of activities that we've spoken about. I think the time it's quite clear that right now, as the world is changing so quickly, and as we all become computer literate and use the computer for just so many things, that we understand the importance of the website and the importance of having a bold, clear statement right on the first page of the website that explains who we are and how we treat people. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Steve. And our next presenter, Lynn Wolf, is currently a mentor and communications facilitator for the Federation of Jewish Men's Clubs Intermarriage and Keruv Initiative. She has extensive experience training and advising the consultant volunteers in the efforts to create a more welcoming and inclusive culture to intermarrieds in their congregations and conducting workshops for synagogue school educators. Today she will speak on staff and teacher sensitivity. Lynn?
Thank you, Marion. To begin, I want you to know that my experience of 20-plus years as an on-the-ground intermarriage professional prepared me for an amazing journey, FJMC's Care of Intermarriage Initiative that began over 10 years ago. It was started as a grassroots movement of a few great men who were moved by the pain they witnessed in their synagogues by their peers whose children married out. They were guided by the visionary leadership of Rabbi Chuck Simon. The goal of this initiative is to place the issues surrounding intermarriage on the agenda of our synagogues, take steps to make change within that culture, and ultimately be welcoming and inclusive to intermarried families. This is accomplished through rabbinic think tanks and a series of training sessions designed to train lay leaders to be strategic partners with their rabbis. Recently, we have added workshops for educators in our synagogue schools and preschools designed to sensitize and teach them how to respond meaningfully to questions and situations that arise with the children of the intermarried. We have included synagogue staff, clergy, synagogue leaders, youth, group leaders, and will in our next workshop include camping staff. Discussions are generated as a result of scenarios and situations that are presented, as well as those that have been experienced personally. The dialogue motivates this recall. Included in the discussion is how to deal with non-Jewish symbols in the home, how to respond to non-Jewish family members' religious celebrations, how to work with parents who lack any Jewish memories, and how attitudes create inclusivity and welcome. Our own attitudes are examined, and an understanding is developed that as professionals, we need to place our own biases on the shelf. It has no place in the classroom. Over the past 3 years, we have conducted these workshops all over the country in conservative synagogues, agencies for Jewish education, and for community partnerships educators who represent different streams of Judaism. I want to share with you at this point a personal anecdote at my expense that sometimes comes up when we try to attract educators to attend this workshop who are not so convinced that they should. And they say, I am aware. I have children from interfaith families in my program now. I am sensitive to their needs. I really don't want to spend my time on this. There are more important things for me to spend my time on. So I make the point that we all need tune-ups. And I relate my own personal faux pas. A colleague who was a principal of a synagogue school asked me to fill in and teach a fourth grade Sunday school class for a semester. So I did. One of my teaching methods was to tell the children that I give them homework for their parents. That was my way of informing the parents about what the children are learning, and I didn't want the children to go home. And when their parents asked them, what did you do in Hebrew school today, respond, nothing. The typical response, which as a parent I had heard. So I would give them a small index card with a question that related to the lesson of the day and ask them to discuss the question with their parents and then have their parents write no more than could fit on this small index card. This part they loved. They saw this as their parents having homework for my class. The lesson of this particular day was on Shabbat. And the question the children brought home to their parents was, share with us a wonderful Shabbat family experience that you remember from your childhood. Well, I received a call that evening from an upset parent. I converted to Judaism. I don't have a Shabbat experience to share. You made me feel bad. Me, the person who, above all, after being an intermarriage professional at that point for 10 years, should have been sensitive to the fact that not all the families were Jewish, or if they were, there had been conversions and all did not share the same childhood. Another parent called me the next day. You embarrassed me. I am not Jewish. I couldn't answer that question. I support my children and family. We have a Jewish home. And I have helped my husband to create it, and I feel that I even do more than my Jewish husband does. Why did you put me in that position? Embarrassing? Yes. By the time I got the second call, I realized I had to use this as a teaching moment. I told her how much I appreciated her call, and I thanked her. I apologized, and the assignment became one that she could answer. It was a wonderful family memory created around a holiday. I called back the first parent, apologized, and gave the amended assignment. So even the most seasoned intermarriage professional needs tune-ups. In conducting these workshops, our method is to facilitate a discussion challenging the educators to be motivated and guided to figure out thoughtful, reality-based solutions to scenarios and situations which we present that will be carried back to their own settings. Share situations that have happened in their classrooms or can potentially occur and strategize possible solutions. Examine their own feelings, the attitudes of congregation, synagogue staff, and clergy towards interfaith families. Our projected outcomes are that the participants will understand and have greater insight about the children's families. Listen to these parents and children. Develop strategies, responses that will make children from interfaith families feel accepted and comfortable. participate in ongoing dialogue convened by school director to ensure problem solving and continued resolution of issues so when they arise, they can be addressed. Clarify policy and goals with clergy and education director so all are on the same page and carry the same message. Understand that knowledge of Judaica and Hebrew is not the only skill needed as a Jewish educator today. The attitudes of those who teach and interface with our children is what can open each child's mind and heart to the Jewish journey we intend for them to embark on. No matter what choices were made by the families our students are part of, whether we would choose them for ourselves or not, we are a professional in the Jewish community and need to treat the children in our care and their families with respect and be non-judgmental. In the evaluation submitted after we have conducted the workshop, it has been stated consistently from the attendees that they have rarely or ever been brought together for an in-service to discuss the issues that deal with the children from interfaith families, and it is needed. We know that we are doing the right thing and are resolved to continue conducting these educator workshops that are also open to clergy, board, and staff, because there are more and more children from interfaith families who enter our schools. As professionals, we need to be aware of our students' backgrounds, not be startled, surprised, or judgmental. Our workshop, Sensitizing Teachers Who Work with the Children in Interfaith Families, provides the opportunity to have an honest, open, non-judgmental dialogue that will enable the attendees to better understand where these students are at, where they come from, and how to better serve their needs. In conclusion, remember how we welcome and include intermarried parents, their children, and extended families have far-reaching implications. How Jewish institutions, those who work in them and represent our synagogues and schools, act and react will determine how vibrant and thriving our Jewish community is and will be. Thank you.
Thank you, Lynn. We will now take questions from those of you who have been listening. To ask a question, press star 6. Questions will be directed to a queue and taken in the order that they are received. Just a reminder, in consideration of time, please keep your questions short and to the point and no statements, please. You may direct your question to a specific presenter or to any of the group. Paul, do you want to take over from that?
All right, our first question is from Congregation B'nai Israel.
We're not hearing it.
All right. Temple Emmanuel. All right, so far so good here. Next one, all I have is a phone number, 952-873-7300.
That's me.
Go for it.
Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yes.
Sorry, this is Avi Olitsky from Bethel Synagogue. Thank you for doing this today, and I appreciate it. I think the speaker thus far
Bethel
Synagogue in St. Louis Park, Minnesota.
Thank you.
Great.
Lynn, I think your comments are the one that struck me most, and I appreciate all the speakers thus far. I think, and I may be speaking on an island here, but I've been talking over email with some of my staff as this is going on. I feel like a lot of what has been shared is pretty pshita, pretty obvious. And it's really speaking to people coming into the building already, and I'm really interested in hearing more about those who aren't. Ron, I like your idea about the Apple Store, but if I have a BlackBerry, I'm not coming to the Apple Store. And frankly, Apple makes their product. You have to go to the Apple Store in order to get it fixed or answer questions. It's not very inclusive in that capacity. It's not accessible. You can't even speak to someone.
Excuse me. Do you have a question?
Yeah, I want to know what could we be doing in terms of not making ourselves, you know, put on a new coat of paint to appear welcoming, but what could we actually do to transform the institutions, both to bring people in and change it when we're inside?
Okay, who would like to take that one?
Well, you know, my point about the Apple Store is just one example. I understand that it's a closed system, and we certainly don't want to be a closed system. My point about it is, first of all, they, like Disney and other companies that are onto this quality service thing, are cued into the importance of welcoming. Your question is okay, so these are people already coming to us. What about going out and encouraging people? There we got to look at our friends at Chabad. Those guys get this. They are not afraid to go and into public spaces and engage with Jews and welcome them in. I have all kinds of problems with Chabad, but boy, are there lessons to learn. One of the lessons Lynn emphasized, which is that now some of you will say this is disingenuous, but they believe this, that they will accept everybody in a non-judgmental way, at least initially. They really do sort of, you know, put out that welcome mat for people that otherwise would not walk into buildings. So there are things to learn from them. There are things to learn from social networking. For example, for my new book, I'm on sabbatical now working on a book on what I'm calling relational Judaism. It's going to be a follow-up to the Spirituality of Welcoming book that I know some of you know. I've been looking at Hillel. Hillel now has literally hired, college sophomores and juniors to go out on college campuses and find, through their own social networks, 60 students a year to have out for coffee, just to engage them, tell me your story, and then hopefully lead them to some sort of engagement with Jewish life. We could be doing that in synagogues. We could be asking our members to give us, you know, people they think might be interested in an invitation from a rabbi or a lay leader to go out and have coffee. Wouldn't that be a terrific project to get people who are not currently in our membership ranks involved, possibly in Jewish life and in our congregations? I mean, so it's that sort of thing I think we can be doing to reach out to those who are not now members of our places.
Thank you.
Sure.
Next question.
Okay. Our next question is from L. Kintish, please.
Alice Kintish from Rockland County, north of New York City, Congregation Sons of Israel. We didn't focus today in this conversation on parents of intermarried, and I would like someone on the panel to talk about what we can do in our community for them. Because in our community, which is mostly an older population, we have perhaps a dozen or more families whose children have married a non-Jew and who, frankly, are embarrassed, quiet about it, don't want to talk about it, and we know that there is pain there in some cases. Can someone address that issue and how we might help engage these parents and grandparents?
This is Steve Lachter, Alice.
Yes, hi, Steve.
How are you?
Good.
One of the ways that, in fact, this whole initiative started was grandparents who were concerned about their children, who they were dating and who they were marrying. And if you look at the FJMC website, you'll see some of the quotations of people who feel it. What did I do wrong? But one of the earliest things we started were private focus groups with grandparents and parents to sit down and actually talk about their pain. I mean, that was 10 years ago this started. It's important that they understand they're not alone, that in fact other people have experienced these issues and the importance of how to deal with them. And there's been a series of programs run. It's something that really goes back more than 10 years. I understand, I appreciate the nature of your community, but Getting these people together to number one, to speak about their pain and have generally a moderated session, sometimes with a social worker, depending upon your audience. But the opportunity to express themselves and how they feel and how they deal with individual problems rather than just walking away is certainly a place to start.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
one of the things that we, this is Bob Schlossberg,
oh,
one of the things
oh, I'd
that,
love
that,
to see it.
That we've been that I've been doing and encouraging my colleagues to
thanks
do
so
is
much.
To meet
okay.
with in particular the intermarried couples who are engaged to be intermarried and to be a part of their lives from the get-go and work with them. And I've actually created a program where I do not perform the marriage, but I write the wedding talk and help put it together a spiritually meaningful ceremony. I think a lot of it is creating a connection before the wedding takes place, because often people will assume, well, the rabbi won't perform the marriage, therefore he wants nothing to do with me, which of course is not the case. And I can send a letter of congratulations or make a phone call to the potential bride and groom from the get-go and offer my services. And some take me up on it, but some don't. Those who have established a close relationship, from before the wedding even takes place. And it's created some of the most meaningful relationships for me. So I think the first thing is to get them in the door and to let them know that they are not rejected just because people of two different religions fell in love.
Thank you. Our next question, we don't have a name. We have a phone number, 650-559-5896. We'll move on. Next question is from Elliot Morris.
Hi. Actually, it's Marilyn Morris from Plainview, New York. Getting to the, I understand and actually agree with the concept of the importance of a welcoming website. I was wondering what your experience has been with the use of Facebook as an outreach.
Our rabbi is very active. He tends to be a young fellow, very, very active in all sorts of social media. So we have extensive both Facebook and Twitter activities, and it does seem to draw in a large number of individuals and also people who may or may not be affiliated with the shul. In Washington, D.C., we happen to have a fair number of independent minyanim, and this is one way that the rabbi seems to connect up with some of these unaffiliated people, which, of course, over the long term is very important to have the connections, whether they're affiliated or not.
I might add that one of the young women at one of the Women's League conferences suggested that if you get members of your board and people who are active to put on their Facebook pages, I'm going to such and such an event, hope you'll be there,
mm-hmm.
who else will come, and that would generate interest.
I have to mention my father was also the president of the Plainview Jewish Center Men's Club many, many years ago.
Okay, next question.
Next question, I believe, is from Jacksonville Jewish Center, 904-268-6739.
Yep, that's me. Can you hear me?
Yes,
yep.
Yes.
What's your name?
This is Rabbi Jesse Olitsky from the Jacksonville Jewish Center. I guess my question is, in the past 7 or so years, Jacksonville went from having 3 conservative United Synagogue congregations to 1. We're a large congregation, but that means that we sort of have the whole gamut of opinions, as all congregations do. So how do we wrestle as we're dealing with our own challenges with Keruv? We have people on the left who are saying, we're not doing enough, we should be doing more, and people who complain and are hesitant about even the baby steps that we're taking to make ourselves more welcoming. So how do we work? Maybe the answer is you can't, but how do we find that balance so that everybody comes on board?
Well, I'll take a shot at that. One of the first things we did at Addis Israel was we had our new rabbi make a statement, since he had already been trained in care of activities. We said, you need to state what your views are. As Mar Da'atra, you need to indicate to the community what it is, the standards that you're going to hold to people, and how you view the entire spectrum of Keruv activity. And it was incredibly important to have the rabbi speak from the bima about Keruv. obviously you're in a difficult position because you can't satisfy everyone, but I think the whole community needs to know what your ground rules are. And I would say that's a start.
And I think the intermarried person feels much more comfortable knowing what the parameters are and what they're allowed to do and what they can't do. Any other answers?
Rabbi Litsky, this is Lynn Wolf. Have you been to the rabbinic think tanks that Rabbi Simon has conducted?
Yes.
Oh, okay. Because there, you know, you have the opportunity to be with, you know, your peers and listen to what.
No. I mean, yeah. I have my own thoughts, my own views, but saying, you know, the challenge of any congregation, but for us, you know, a 900 family congregation,
wow.
Of many congregations is that you're trying to bring everybody on board, make yourselves more welcoming and embrace the realities of the American Jewish community of 2012 while still having those who are committed remain committed. And that's one of our challenges.
Well, you know, one thing I have found through the years in working with intermarried families is that once they join, once they are part of us, and they become a part of us through all these welcoming ideas that we've submitted today, they become the most spiritual-minded, committed families that we have. And when they start their path with us this way, those that don't know them get to know them. Because this is our reality. This is half of our population. And we can't turn our backs to them. And I know you have a balancing act, but this is the only way. It's going to have to, through them coming in and people actually seeing who they are. You know, it's the unknown that is difficult for some of those people that are in the old school and set in their ways. But it's the past. I mean, this is reality.
Yeah.
It's tough.
Rabbi,
but this is it.
Yeah, Rabbi, my suggestion that for any of these kinds of challenging situations is exactly what we just heard. I think that if you can find ways both to meet with your critics one-on-one, outside the building even, and explain your position, explain why it's important, engage them in the conversation, ask them to be allies is one strategy, and a second strategy is to make more public those people who have come into Judaism through testimonials, stories, even personal meetings. I mean, everybody fears the unknown. So, you know, once I get to know somebody and I see what they're bringing to the congregation, I think that you might be able to chip away at some of that resistance.
Okay, thank you all. Next question.
Next question is from Richard Gray.
Hi, this is Richard Gray from Temple Emeth in Chestnut Hill. I feel as a part of welcoming is to make our congregations used more often, and maybe even, I would say, to make them more like community centers than just congregations. How does that fit into the concept of welcoming that water down what we're doing too much?
Who would like to take that?
Well, I personally, I think that anything that gets people in the door is good. It doesn't always have to be religious or educational and social. We've got, you know, movies, for example, that we show senior movies a couple of times a month, in which people of throughout the community, people who are of different religions come together and mix together and enjoy it. So, my particular approach for my congregation is, anytime someone walks in the door, it's an opportunity to connect them. And we use it. But even though I don't sit through the movies, I do pop in, and especially during the social hour before they begin,
make people feel at home and welcome, and as well use this opportunity to sell other programs that are going on in the congregation. So I'm of the belief that anytime someone comes in for something positive in the building, this is something good.
I want to add to that, we recently had a meeting of all the arms of the synagogue and programming, and one of the young women raised her hand and said, there's a group of my constituents that feel that everything is so Jewish that we do. And we said, well, we're a synagogue. But they said they want things that aren't quite so Jewish. So we need to get them into the door and then kind of move them into the Jewish stuff.
My only caution, it's Ron here, my only caution with the reliance on programming, and we see this now even in Jewish community centers, is that programming is, you know, is a good way to provide people with experiences, and it is good to get them in the door. But if the program itself doesn't connect people into relationship with Judaism, with clergy, with other friends, with community, helps them become a better family, then what's the point? You know, I can go to better, you know, movie theaters where I get popcorn delivered to my seat, and I can go to concerts, and I can go to, you know, public swimming pools. Value added of a synagogue, the value added of a synagogue is it's a sacred community of relationships. So I would recommend that you look at every single program we do, including worship experiences, including the movie night, and everything, and say, now what is, as a result of this program, is going to strengthen relationships between the people and between individuals and the Jewish experience. If we can answer that question positively, then it's great to bring people in the door. If not, then it's just another series of programs. Some people will come, they'll enjoy it, they'll go home, and so what?
Good point. Next question.
Our next question is from Richard Barron.
I don't think he's here.
All right. The next question that we have, then, we only have a phone number, is 973-227-8280.
Yes. Hi, Mary Schadewasser from Pinebrook Jewish Center. How do you get involved with the educator workshops? Is there registration? How often do you have these workshops?
This is Lynn Wolf. Is this Mary?
Yes.
Mary, hi. Well, last year there, I did about 10 in New Jersey about this time, and I got in touch with most of the synagogues. What happens is you just let us know that you want to have it. We try to get groups together within a community for us to conduct it. If we have a... I've been conducting a lot of them, but we have a lot of our care of consultants who are our lay leaders who have had experience in running these as well. Just give us a call, and we'll get some information from you,
and
it can happen.
I have a phone number where I can get in touch with you?
You can get in touch with me I can give you a number.
Okay.
I'll give you area code 925
3181. Thank you.
And you're calling California.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. You're welcome.
Next question.
Our next question comes from 212-543-5329.
Oh, thank you for taking my question. My name is Madeline Gould from Temple Israel of Great Neck in New York. And it's a similar question that was raised a couple of people ago, but now from a congregant perspective rather than from the clergy. And
can you speak up, please?
Yes, and
it's actually to ask for advice on how you would.
I think we lost her.
Hello?
I think we lost
Can you hear me?
Now we can.
Oh, I'm so sorry. Yep. I don't know if you got my name. I'm a congregant and board member of the Board of Trustees and Ritual Committee at Temple Israel of Great Neck in New York, and was privileged to hear Rabbi Wolfson a couple of months ago. And I'm really asking for your advice and how you would recommend proceeding in getting the Keruv programming introduced to a congregation when there seems to be mixed sentiments or resistance expressed by the congregation and possibly by the clergy. You know, I don't want to force, it just seems an obvious need to me, but maybe I'm on the left with regard to having a welcoming committee and community and having outreach. And I need advice. Apparently, there were some predecessors to me who've tried to bring this in a few years ago, met with resistance, and I'm just curious if you've had experiences that could inform me on how to overcome the barriers to introducing programming like this.
Well, again, I think the most important thing is to build the relationship between you and the key influencers in this, you know, social system. So if I were you, I would identify where the power lies. If the power lies with the rabbi, then you've got to, you know, start talking to the rabbi. And I would make it as personal as I can. If it's with the key lay leaders who have influence in the community, then I would do that as well. I mean, in a way,
I'm a member of our Board of Trustees. I think I was muted at the point that is that something, is that the route you think, the Board of Trustees or the Ritual Committee?
Well,
or you think it should be more personal?
I don't think you can show up at a committee and put it on the table and say, let's discuss this. As the first step. I think it's all about relationships.
Okay.
I think you've got to go and do the work of organizing, and that's one-on-one conversations with people, not in a group first, and make your points and assess where the power is and whether or not you can move that power. If you can't, then I'm afraid you're barking up the wrong tree. Mm-hmm. If you can begin to influence people, then you take it to a ritual committee or a board of trustees meeting. You have to do the groundwork to make change happen.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
Right, I think we have time for just one more question.
Then it is the last one in the queue. 650-948-1505.
All right, there's nobody there. Okay. I just want
Marion
Moore.
Well, can I add to the last comment as long as we have a minute or two here?
Absolutely.
This is Steve Lacker. When this originally started, it was quite clear that it had to be some care of consultant or one or two, and a rabbinical partnership. And it required a personal visit and maybe lengthy discussions over a period of time. That it really was a partnership between a lay leader and the Maradatra, basically. And unless you have that support, it's very hard to make this work. The power, as Ron says, might reside in slightly different places in your particular synagogue, but for the most part, unless you can get a rabbinical lay partnership, and then, of course, the lay leader can take a great deal of the flack that sometimes the rabbi needs to deflect. But that was always envisioned as a rabbi-lay partnership, just to sort of add on to what Ron had said.
Marion, can I also ask that if anyone wants more information, I give one person my phone number, but on the Keruv initiative or the sensitivity workshops that we hold, they can reach me at lwolf, wolfe@fjmc.org. We can give them more information.
Great. I also want to point out that there are three websites that you can go on to for more information. Women's League is wlcj.org, United Synagogue, uscj.org, and fjmc.org for Federation of Jewish Men's Clubs. Our committee produced a trifold brochure called Shalom Welcome. We want you to be part of our community. That is, you can customize, put your own pictures in, and hand out when people come for Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. In addition, you'll find steps toward inclusiveness and tools for building a culture of Keruv, which gives you all kinds of activities and ways of beginning Keruv in your own synagogues and sisterhoods. We redid Baderech, which is a guide for the Jewish lay leadership and professionals. That's on the United Synagogue website. So these are more references for you to take a look. That brings our webinar to a close. You may look for a recording of our webinar on the uscj.org website in the near future. Once again, a very special thank you to our presenters for your thoughtful presentations and to all of you who participated. You have given us a lot to think about and hopefully to put into action. Thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you.
And L'shana Tova to everyone.
L'shana Tova.